I was not on the Silk Commission, so you may well ask, what the hell is he doing telling us about the tax proposals of the Silk Report? The commission I chaired was commissioned by the Welsh government, and it was supposed to cover all of the way that Wales is financed, not simply which taxes should be under the control of the Welsh government or assembly, but also the how the block grant was supposed to be determined and administered. I'm sure you all know that at the present time, the way the Welsh government is financed is that the British government decides how much money it's allowed to spend in a given year. And then it subtracts from that something for the council tax that's collected in Wales and the business rates that are collected in Wales, and what's left over it gives rise to a block grant, and it just says, okay, you can spend X squillion. We're assuming we're taking something off for council tax and business rates. Here's the block grant to make up the rest, and that's it. Now, there are a lot of things wrong with that arrangement. There are lots of things wrong in principle, I would argue, but there are things wrong in detail. You can't save. You know, if the Welsh government doesn't spend the money, bye-bye, it's gone. Can we save it and spend it next year, or save it for 5 years and use it to build a bridge? Answer, no. There used to be some arrangement for carrying funds over, but that's actually been, we recommended that be enlarged. The British government actually then went on and restricted it. So there's an even more limited ability to carry money over than there used to be. And so it's a very rigid arrangement, and it's one that I would argue doesn't necessarily encourage, provide the right incentive, shall we say, to the Welsh government to spend money in the wisest possible way. So our report fell into two parts. The first part was, look, this block grant, how is it determined? Is it the right size? Is it determined in the right way? And the second part is, and now, how should it be supplemented or replaced, partially replaced, by taxes? We reported to the Welsh government. The first report, we concluded Wales should get a bit more money. This made us extremely popular in Wales. Universal approval. Actually, I was very lucky, because the way we worked this out was, well, we can't just say, you know, we think we should. How do we decide how much we should get? And we said, well, in England, how do they decide how much money in the health service goes to, say, Sunderland as opposed to Cornwall? And I asked the question, I was told, well, they got a formula. I said, get away? How do they determine what education expenditures? Well, not clear now, but they used to have a formula, and that's where most of the money comes from. Local government, you know, revenue support, they've got a formula. So I said, well, what happens if we apply those formulae in Wales to see how much Wales would get if it were just an English region? Horror. We don't know what that will produce. You know, maybe we're getting too much. I said, well, you know, look, I'm an independent commission. You know, that's going to be your problem. Let's do it. Anyway, we did it. And, you know, luck. I must have been born under a lucky star. I mean, had it turned out that we were getting way too much, you know, I'd have been driven over Offa's Dyke, you know, on a fast freight. If we'd been getting a hell of a lot too little, that wouldn't have been nice either, because the Labour Party had been empowering Wales in London for 15 years or so. You know, they would have come in for a lot of flack if we were in a position where we were getting miles too little money. Turned out we were getting a bit too little, which was the perfect conclusion. And you know, it wasn't a fix, it just dropped out that way. So there we are, that's why I'm still persona grata in Cardiff. But anyway, that's by the way, in a way, because when the British government decided it was going to have a commission, because it's not going to take any notice of a commission by the Welsh government, it must have its own, which is fair enough, it told the Silk Commission, okay, look at the taxation, but you're not supposed to look at the block grant. That's outside your terms of remit. That's something which we will negotiate directly with the Welsh government, which they continue to do to this day, and I confidently predict they will continue to do for the indefinite future. The tax bit, yes, okay, you can have a look at it, and as Avril says, there's that overlap between the terms of reference of the Silk Commission and our terms of reference for the Commission I chair for the Welsh Government, and actually there's quite a substantial overlap in conclusions as well. I think, you know, reasonable people look at a situation, they often come to rather similar conclusions. So so what Silk has recommended is not, is there are a couple of areas where it's slightly different from what we recommended, and if I'm honest, I think they were slightly more consistent. A couple of places we decided we would follow a what we thought was probably a more politically expedient route. They were slightly more correct in adhering to strict principle, but they're quite small areas of difference. There's a very substantial overlap. What is the argument for any tax devolution to Wales? What's wrong with the block grant? Now, these are my words, not the words of... There is, as Paul was saying, a statement of principle in his report which sets out why you need some tax devolution. I haven't reproduced that here. These are really, really my words. What's wrong with the block grant approach? One of the consequences of it is that Welsh government policies have no effect whatever on its own revenue. If the Welsh government followed a catastrophic policy that wrecked the economy, it would get the same money to spend the following year anyway. If it did something brilliant, suppose they said, you know what, it's going to be desperately unpopular, but we're going to cut expenditure on health because we thought of a really brilliant way to get the economy going and we're going to spend the money on that. If it did that and the economy got going, it would get no extra revenue to a close approximation, and therefore it wouldn't be able to spend any more on health in future anyway. So it would be sacrificing spending on social services, which is what it tends to be judged on, with no payback in terms of its own revenue. So it's got no incentive to foster growth, for example, if that means reducing current social services spending. And we think that's odd. It's odd that you should be completely detached from the consequences of your actions. Now, I don't want to say there's not a tension here. There is a tension here. You don't want either to be in a system, perhaps, where every fluctuation of the economy restricts the government's ability to finance social services. I mean, that's not good either. But there is a balance to be struck. And at the moment, we're in a situation where they're completely detached from the consequence of their actions, and that can't be good. The other point is they cannot change the size of their revenue budget, whether it's too large or too small. As I say, they're not allowed to save. If you don't spend the money, it's gone. So, you know, in the days when government expenditure was growing quickly in the early noughties, the Scots, of course, were getting far too much money. They were piling up, you know, unspent balances like here. But there was some ability in those days to carry money over. But, you know, basically, yeah, there was a big pressure to spend it. If they gave it to you, let's find somewhere to spend it on. And so, again, that isn't a good way to manage public affairs. That marginal expenditure at the end of the year is highly likely to be wasted. So it's not good that you've got this rigid budget. You've got to spend it. If you find you need more money to do social services, you can't get it. What you can do and what they enjoy doing is you just blame London. Hey, well, you know, they're not giving us enough money. No, no, look, health service falling apart, but you know, not our fault, it's London. So it's a situation where at the margin, you're not encouraged for the most efficient use of public spending, and it gives you a cop-out too that, you know, you can blame somebody else if things aren't going as they should. So for all these reasons, I think this is not a good system, and I can't be accused of originality here. I mean, it's just a very sort of long-standing principle in public finance, which you learn in, you know, year one if you're an economics student, that any government spending money should as far as possible raise as much as possible of that money itself and should be responsible for doing it. You know, the pocket money approach in general isn't good. So there we are. That was why I think everybody agrees that there ought to be some tax devolution. Now, these are the taxes which Silk has recommended should be devolved. Business rates is a bit odd, as I say, because it's not actually money that's supposed to be spent by the Welsh government. The money is circulated back and spent, you know, by local authorities. It It's in a. I won't go into this now because we don't have a lot of time. If people are interested, I'm very happy to go into paralyzing detail on this, but I won't. Business tax is occupied a sort of odd, half devolved state. This is where we and Silk diverged. They were more consistent than we were. We said, let's just leave it alone. And they said, no, it should be fully devolved. And so that is the recommendation. It's sort of half devolved anyway, and it's not supposed to be a resource the Welsh central government uses anyway. It's supposed to be part of local authority finance, so I'll pass over it. The other taxes, stamp duty, landfill, and aggregates, although aggregates is subject to an EU court consideration as to whether it constitutes illegal state aid. And APD, they recommended, as we did. That's the one that's been rejected by HMG, and then Welsh Government may introduce new taxes subject to HMG consent. Those are recommendations of Silk, and those I think are pretty well, apart from APD, in the draft Wales bill. These are the taxes that are not to be devolved: VAT, national insurance contributions, and all those other things. Now, there's a very strong overlap. Well, I mean, they're the same as our commission said, and they're actually the same as the Calman Commission said in Scotland. This is not accidental. The principles that you apply to tax devolution are not that different from the principles that you apply to legislative devolution. One of the things you're going to ask is, well, look, is this something which affects the people in that locality and doesn't really, to a first order anyway, affect people elsewhere? Because if so, why isn't it devolved? If it's something that you can't enact without having a first order effect on other people in other areas, maybe it's not one that should be devolved, maybe it's one that should be settled centrally. That's a fairly obvious principle. People apply it when they're talking about legislation. We haven't proposed devolving the army or something. And it's not different with taxes. The point about all of these taxes is that if you devolve them, they'd be likely to break up the common market, if you like, the single market that we have economically in the UK. They would lead to smuggling or to people making economic decisions, not on the basis of where true costs and benefits are to be found, but just because there's a tax advantage from doing it. So they would, in that sense, be distortionary. So the reason that you don't devolve most of these things is because either it's going to be fantastically expensive to try and administer it, or because it will be highly distortionary in that it will mess up the single market or in goods or labour and cause sort of spillovers. Taxes you can devolve are ones there which are administratively not impossible to do so, and where the spillovers are very limited, and that essentially is what results in pretty well everybody who's looked at it saying, yeah, let's do these, let's not do those. But if anybody wants to talk about a particular tax, happy to do so. Taxes on business are interesting. Now, this is what Silk says: we don't recommend devolving corporation tax to Wales, but if the Scots and Irish get it, then we'll have it too. That's my comment about that. The reason this is live at all, because the Cameron Commission in Scotland said, no, don't do it, and Silk said, don't do it, I was a bit more nuanced. I said, do you know what, we could sort of do it, but the reason it's a live issue at all is because the Northern Irish government has been batting very hard for having corporation tax devolved to Northern Ireland on the grounds that the corporation tax rate in the Republic is much lower, and they're having to compete implication decisions of businesses on the same land area, on the same island, with the Republic. The British government has pretended to be interested in this proposition and has gone into long discussions with the Northern Irish. I was called in by the Northern Irish to talk to them at one point because the British government said, yeah, okay, we're going to think about this. And then they set the Treasury on them. Sorry, Mark. The Treasury's tactic was not to say you can't have it in principle, but to make it so damn expensive that there was no, that they couldn't possibly accept it. So what they were proposing to do with the block grant, if they gave them income tax, was just virtually going to wipe out such a big chunk of it that, you know, they just couldn't contemplate it. Were the Treasury's arguments balanced and fair? You bet they were. They were basically out to make sure that this was a very unattractive proposition. And so I think that discussion, I don't guess, is going anywhere. And if they don't give it to Northern Ireland, then there's not even going to be an issue about corporation tax anywhere else. Devolving corporation tax would create grave difficulties. You'd have to change the basis on which corporation tax is levied. I think that's possible, and I think they should probably do it. But I don't think there's a chance, so I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But the other thing Sir did propose was that the control of the capital allowances should be devolved to Wales, so that it could offer enhanced capital allowances in enterprise zones. I mean, is that in the Act? Have they accepted that one?
No. I can't recall them saying so.
Okay. Right. The big one is income tax. The point about all those little taxes is, without wishing to offend monkeys, they are peanuts, right? I mean, we're not even talking about 2% of the Welsh of the total budget of the Welsh government, which would be represented by the devolution of those little taxes that we've mentioned. I mean, they go up and down with the economy, but we're talking about a couple of hundred million, which, as Edeville has said, relative to a budget of 15 billion, is it's pretty well rounding error. So while they're useful in some ways, they are not going to make a first order difference to the way the Welsh government's financed. Income tax, to a certain extent, would. If the Silk proposals were implemented, I think you'd be talking about something like 2 billion. Now, 2 billion on 15 doesn't change the world, but it is at least an appreciable slug of your total revenue. So income tax could be argued would make a material difference to the accountability of the Welsh government. It would have to worry about its income tax base when it was putting the policies in place. This at least is material. The proposal is that the Welsh government should have responsibility for setting income tax rates on earned income, not on savings and dividends. The reason for that is entirely pragmatic. It'd just be very difficult to administer that. With that, you just create an industry and you make the accountants very happy and maybe even the lawyers, but you wouldn't get much money out of it. Just too hard to do. So that's just a pragmatic exemption. The idea is that you have new Welsh rates of income tax, which would be collected by HMRC. Now, the way this works is you're sharing the income tax base with the UK. So it's not that we're going to... So they will make room, if you like. What the UK government will say, these are the sub proposals now, we will reduce all rates of tax by 10p. So the tax you now owe the UK government is not 20p or 40p or 45, it's 10, 30 or 35. See, I can do math very quickly. That creates the room for the Welsh government then to levy its own tax on the same tax base. It's an idea that was first developed in Canada, where that's how the provincial authorities in Canada and the Commonwealth government there share their tax base. So we know it can be done because it's done in Canada. The proposition then was the Welsh government should be able to vary its tax rates. So if it puts on 10p, you're just back where you started. As a citizen, you're paying exactly the same money as you did before, only now proportion's going to Westminster and proportion's going to the Welsh government. It's all being collected by the Inland Revenue, so you're dealing with the same people. And that's the way it works. Now, the Silk Commission recommended that the Welsh government should have the power to change those tax rates independently. So in other words, if it wanted, it could put up the basic rates or down without putting up the higher or at the higher rates, or the other way around. You can change the higher rates without changing the basic rate. This is a departure. This tax sharing system has been implemented in Scotland following the Cowman Commission. But in Scotland, they just have a single Scots rate. So in other words, you take 10p off all the bands, the Welsh government's got its 10p, but it can only change one rate. If it puts the 10p up, everybody's rate goes up by 10p, whether you're paying in the 20 bracket, the 40 bracket, or the 45 bracket, up or down, the same. It's come to be termed the lockstep. I don't know who first coined that term, it wasn't me. But anyway, it's a good shorthand. This is a lockstep, all marginal rates go up and down together under the Scottish system. Now, we pointed out that Wales is not Scotland. This is a message. You might think that's pretty obvious, but it's really hard to get that over in London. One of the big differences is, now, there's some very striking figures, and I can't remember them. I think 5% of the Scottish population live within 25 miles of the border. In Wales, it's 45%. 90% of the Welsh population live within 50 miles of the border. The Scots have only got sheep on the other side of the border. There's nobody till you get to Carlisle. And that ain't all that big anyway. You're into Newcastle before you get any substantial population. We've got something like 10% of the total population of England within 25 miles on the other side of our border. This is a hugely porous border. The number of people who commute across it to work every day is 150,000 when we looked at it back in 2010, and it's probably more now. So this makes a big difference. Nobody likes me when I say this, particularly Welsh politicians, but it's the truth. You can't really afford to raise higher rates in Wales. You will lose more money than you get. You know, if I'm a successful lawyer or a successful businessman and I'm making $500,000 a year and you put up my tax, it costs me $5,000 a year. If I'm making $1,000,000 a year, it costs me $10,000 a year. 5 years, I've given you £50,000. Get out of here. Why would I do it? You know, if I'm living in Abergavenny, I can live in Ross and Wye. Or if I'm living in Ross and Wye, I can live in Abergavenny. You know, the border is just too porous. The other thing to remember is, you're not expecting people to move necessarily. People do move anyway. The average length of stay in one house is 10 years. So that means that 10% of the population are moving every year. Well, you know, if I'm going to move anyway, and I've got a choice, is it going to be Chepstow or Lydney? Probably a bad example, but anyway. I'm going to live in A or B, you know, and I've got this tax differential. What am I going to do? So over time, not immediately, but over 5 or 10 years, if the Welsh government puts up the top rate of tax, it'll lose revenue, not make it. At least that's the analysis that we came up with, and I think Silk was responsive to that. They thought there was something in that, and that's why they said, "Okay, look, you can't force the Welsh government to do this. And you've got to give them the option of changing them independently. They can have a high tax policy, they can have a low tax policy. They can do stupid things, they can do intelligent things, but you mustn't force them to do stupid things." So. So we recommend, and Silk recommended as well, that you don't lockstep these together. But as I say, you know, that's what they've done for Scotland, and there's a sort of unwritten rule in Whitehall. You can give the Welsh what we've given the Scots eventually, but you must never give them any more. And so we've got the same, so the Act now has come out and said, You've got the same as Scotland. You've got the tax rate. 10p's off. You've got the 10p, but it's with this lockstep principle. Now, one of the things that people don't always think about is, okay, they're giving you these taxes. How is the block grant going to be affected? Because as I said, even if we did everything that's in Silk, you would only be getting at maximum about 2 billion of the 15 billion that you need. Most other taxes are not going to devolve because they mess things up too much. So you're always going to get the majority of your money, you know, 70-odd%, in the form of a block grant. This is regrettable, but it's not wicked. It's the case in most federal states that you get this vertical gap, if you like, that that subordinate governments can't raise all their own money because you just don't want to devolve all the taxes, because you want a certain degree of uniformity, and therefore there has to be a transfer from the centre to the provincial, federal, state level, whatever you want to call it. So that's a fact of life, we accept that. But it does mean, well, when they give you a tax, you've got to ask the question, yeah, but okay, how much am I paying for this tax? What are they going to do to the block grant if I get this tax? And I can go into paralyzing detail here too. Suffice to say that Silk was aware of the risks here, because some of the things that the Cameron Commission, you know, recommended in Scotland were suicidal, is too hard a word, but you know, they were pretty generous. They were allowing the British government to slash the grant by much more than they should have done. Silk was alert to that, and has argued for a fixed deduction from the block grant for the small taxes, i.e. you work out a certain sum of money, you knock that off the block grant, and that's the end of it. For income tax, there's an adjustment based on a so-called index deduction method. Don't think I should spend long on this. See, one of the principles here is if you're going to genuinely devolve a tax, the block grant mustn't be affected when people change the tax rate. Because if that happens, you haven't devolved the tax. And you know, if I say, okay, you can have this tax, you put the rate up. As a result of putting the rate up, the block grant shrinks. Why would I do it? I haven't got any more money. I'm just getting my own people to pay something that was coming in a transfer before. So helpless. You've got to have a system where the block grant is determined, fixed. So any changes to tax rates then do result in a genuine change in revenue, up or down, depending on your policy. And the way you do that is you say, okay, what's the standard rate of tax on this tax base? What are they levying in England? Because what we'll take off is our tax base times the standard rate. That comes off the block grant. Thank you very much. Now, if I change the standard rate, okay, block grant unaffected. The deduction depends on base standard rate only. And that sounds very simple, and it is simple in the first year, but as time goes on, it gets complicated. And here's why. Suppose this year is okay. Let's suppose we, contrary to all expectations, we actually devolve income tax. And the British government says, right, 2 billion, we're knocking your block grant down by 2 billion, because if you levied standard rates on that base, you'd raise 2 billion, that's off your block grant. Now, what happens 5 years' time? Income tax has gone up. We've had inflation, we've had growth, we've had this, that, and the other. You know, maybe now the budget isn't 15 billion, maybe it's 20 billion. Are you still taking 2 billion off? Obviously not. It's got to be somehow, that 2 billion has got to grow with everything else. But it mustn't grow with your tax base. Because if it does, you're back into a situation where you're providing very false incentives to the Welsh government. If I put income tax up, I'm going to reduce the tax base a little bit. You know, some people just won't work overtime. Some people will pay more accountants to make sure they don't have to pay as much. You know, you won't get proportionately what you expect if you raise the tax. There'll be some offset. So your tax base will shrink. And that's one of the downsides of raising taxes. Well, if the deduction of my block grant is indexed to my tax base, I've got a free pass. Wait a minute, my tax base has gone down. Oh, in that case, we'll reduce the deduction from your block grant, i.e. we'll give you a bigger block grant. So the bad effect of raising taxes is negated for you by the offset mechanism. Well, you don't want that. You want the government to be responsible for what it does. And what's worse, if I reduce taxes and people work more overtime, and they employ fewer accountants to finagle the system, my tax base goes up. I don't get any benefit. If they've indexed the deduction to my tax base, the block grant's going to go down. So you don't want that. So the point is, there are lots of traps for unwary players here. You've got to think about how to index that system in a way that doesn't provide perverse incentives to the Welsh government. And we did the work, Silk did the work, and I think we found a way to do it. But I'll say no more. But what it does mean is that a lot of people, you read it in the press, in papers, people say, oh, well, you know, if we increase taxes, they just cut the block grant. No. You know, people have thought about this. They have thought about how to make sure that doesn't happen. The proposals in Silk will protect you from most of those perverse incentives. So don't be worried that somehow, you know, it's all a farce, and if we do get tax devolution, it'll just all come out in the wash because they'll mess with the block grant. If people play by the rules, that won't happen. All right, what's been the political reaction to this? HMD has said we've got a draft bill, and it is going to implement many of the proposals. A lot of these details, though, are not legislative details. You know, when they had passed the Scotland bill, there was nothing in the bill itself about how the block grant was going to be changed, for example. Now, this isn't surprising because the way the block grant is managed is not subject to any legislation. The Barnett formula and all of that has no legislative basis whatsoever. The Barnett formula is what it is because that's what the Treasury says it is, and if the Treasury says that that up is down and black is white, you know, you can argue with them, but good luck. So there is no legislative basis for it, whatever. It's all done by agreement. So we've got the draft bill, but there will be details to be ironed out in the process of implementation. Some of the detail is still lacking. The other thing is that income tax powers are to be subject to a referendum, which is indeed as the Silk report recommended. And I think they did that because that was their sense of where public opinion was. The public thought this was a big step and they ought to be consulted. Now, here we have an issue, because as far as I can see, the appetite for this referendum among Welsh politicians is somewhere between minimal, zero, and you must be joking. the line that the First Minister is taking, he's putting the blame on me, saying, you know, we haven't got fair funding. You know, it's been shown that our block grant isn't big enough. We want that fixed before we consider this referendum. Now, I don't know whether his thought is this is our, if they really want us to have these taxes, this is a bit of leverage I've got to try and improve the block grant, or whether he thinks they're not going to change the block grant, so this gives me a free pass, I don't have to have the referendum. I think if he's realistic, he's probably thinking the latter. I may be wrong. So that's the position of the Welsh government, that it needs the block grant reviewed first. Now, Silk wasn't supposed to talk about the block grant, but I did notice that they snuck in a line saying, you know, it's quite reasonable that this should be looked. There was a delicate reference to this being a perfectly reasonable position. And even the Welsh Affairs Committee has come out and said it's perfectly reasonable that the block grant be looked at before we have income tax devolution. So there's a certain build-up of informed opinion saying this is what should happen. But we're talking raw politics here. One of the factors is the same piece of work we did that said the Wales doesn't get quite as much as it should. We found a way to simplify that analysis, and we ran the simplified analysis on Scotland, and we found, whoops, you know, you're getting 4 billion more than you should if we do things on a needs basis. So any Barnett reform is likely to result in the Scottish block grant going down rather than up. Not a terribly attractive proposition if you're trying to induce them to vote against independence in a referendum, and therefore something the British government just doesn't want to talk about. So I think the block grant reform is absolutely off the agenda, certainly until way after the Scottish referendum, and maybe after that. You know, the brutal fact is that nobody particularly wants to pick a fight with the Scots anyway. There are more Scottish MPs in the Labour Party than there are Welsh MPs. You know, so good luck. So basically, there's no sign, in my view, that HMG will accede to a reform of the block grant, and therefore this is a convenient way that Welsh politicians can avoid having to go to the public and explain to them that, you know, we're not out to rook you. There's a really good reason why we should have tax powers. Please give it. Please give us to them. And I think this is one area where. Where perceptions of government performance, I mean, Paul Silk said quite rightly that constitutional arrangements shouldn't be hostage to the performance of one particular government at one particular time, and in principle that's clearly right. But I think if you're going to hold a referendum, the perceived performance of the government will be extremely relevant to the outcome of that referendum. And if you get a government that is in bad odour because the health service isn't what people hope for and the PISA results aren't wonderful and they say, give us the pass to raise income tax, clearly, you know, it could go either way. So I don't think there's any appetite for the referendum among politicians in Wales. Certainly opposition politicians, this gives them, you know, the opportunity to have a good sneer at the Labour Party and say, you're bottling it, you know, you should have this referendum. But I tell you what, if they called the referendum, would those parties be putting party workers on the doorstep, you know, to really canvass for it? Doubtful. So I'm afraid I'm quite pessimistic about this. I hope I'm wrong. But I am pessimistic about it. I think minor taxes will certainly be devolved, as we've seen, though not, it appears, APD. We can talk a little about APD if you like, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there'll be no progress. I think there'll be no progress on income tax in the near future, unless a deal is struck on the Barnett squeeze. Now, you know, I always try and think of a way through when people tell me that things are impossible. And my thought was, well, look, you're not going to get a reform of the Barnett formula. But one of the consequences of the Barnett formula is if you are receiving more public spending per head than they are in England, the Barnett formula will gradually squeeze you down until you're at the same average level as England. Now, why is that iniquitous? Because within England, different regions get different levels of public expenditure per head according to need. London's an exception, it gets more expenditure per head, needed or not. But you know, let's leave London on one side. The other regions of England, you know, if the North East gets more spending per head than the Eastern region, because it's got greater social needs. If there's more unemployment, there's more poverty, there's more chronic health problems, maybe there's more crime for all I know, I don't know. But anyway, there are more stable differences than levels of spending per head. Because of need, and there's no tendency to squeeze them together. So, as we've already said, if Wales were part of England, we think it would be getting a tiny bit more than it gets now, and there's no reason, therefore, for it to be squeezed down to an average level, where it gets the same public spending per head as the English average, which includes very affluent areas who don't need much public spending. So, one of the things you could say is, well, look, never mind the shortfall, you know, it's only a couple of percent, we'll forget about it. But let's just get rid of the squeeze. In other words, when public spending starts to grow again, we want Welsh public spending to grow at the same rate as English public spending. That's all we're asking. Just get rid of the squeeze, take it out. That doesn't affect the Scots. We're not asking for a total reform of climate. We're just saying get rid of the squeeze. When you hit a level that you're getting about what you'd get if you were in England anyway, cut the squeeze out. It doesn't affect the Scots. They're on the ceiling. Yeah, they don't need the floor. How about that as a sort of intermediate deal? In my opinion, if the Welsh government got that deal, they should close on it. Because this 300 million figure that's bandied around, got to tell you, it's already, 4 years old? Our shortfall's probably less than that now, if the truth be told. So we talk, also the English have changed all their needs-based formula anyway. So if you redid the work, we don't know where we'd come out. So, frankly, I would just not go to war on that 300 million. I would forget it. If they gave me a floor that I wasn't subject to the Barnett squeeze, I'd close the deal in a heartbeat. But I think the point is, A, will they do that? Not at all clear. And B, does the Welsh government want to close the deal? Or does it want an excuse not to hold the referendum? So, I think that's the only way through I can see, but I'm not sure that it's likely to happen. One of the outcomes of the minor taxes, though, is that it does give the Welsh government some borrowing powers. They are now able to borrow, if the Act goes through, $500 million total. So they can't. It's not a vast amount in relation to the budget, but it does give them a borrowing pot. These taxes, I say, will amount to less than 2% of the budget, which doesn't really meet the case that we were all talking about, the need for more accountability and the right incentives. You know, 2% doesn't really cut it. You need income tax for that. Income tax would only have taken it to about 15%, which is similar to the local authorities' taxation share in their total revenue. So, as I keep telling my anti-devolution friends, you know, this isn't a revolution or a step towards independence. It's just giving the Welsh government the same degree of fiscal responsibility as our local authority. But that can't be swallowed for some people. So I think that's your lot. I don't think we're going to get any further unless the Scots do something. As we've said, if there's a no vote, there will be great pressure in Scotland for Devo more as opposed to Devo Max. Devo Max makes no sense at all. If you don't believe that, you can ask me why, but it doesn't make sincere sense. But they certainly want more than they've got. And if the British government decides it has to concede that, it may well then reopen some of these issues in Wales. But unless that happens, I think we're going to be stuck with the minor taxes without getting income tax and with that $500 million of borrowing, and the accountability issue won't really be resolved.